Hello, thank you for being with us here in the New Life Educational Series with Dr. Rav Lyman. Hello, Rav Lyman. Hello, everyone. Hello, Nitza Mazoz. And along with here, we want to learn from Rav Lyman how to live better. What does it mean to live better? To improve the relations between us. Our life is in the relations between us, the connections between us. We're always surrounded by people, and we have some kinds of relations, whether it's at work, at home, in the business world, and even between countries. It's all a matter of relations. If it's good relations, then life is good. If it's bad relations, then life is bad. We want to learn how to learn well, and we're always focusing on a certain aspect of our life. The insight that we learn, though, is always, can always be applied to all other areas of our life. And today, our focus is on the family unit, and inside the family unit, there's a special relationship between brothers. Be with us. There will be a lot to take to life. Nitza, open the discussion. So inside the relationship between brothers, we want to speak today about a certain emotion. Maybe it's the most ancient emotion between brothers, and that's jealousy. It's something that we know from the Bible, between Cain and Abel. That's where it all started. And jealousy is something very natural that exists between brothers, and we want to see as parents, we can learn how to work correctly with this emotion. And maybe, first of all, to understand it, why is jealousy always present between brothers? Does it have advantages or disadvantages? How do you feel about this? What's your approach to jealousy between brothers? First of all, we need to begin from the assumption that what's in us, it all comes from nature, and only the use of each and every attribute can be correct or incorrect. And jealousy can be very positive. Through jealousy, we advance. Jealousy and respect take him out of this world. They raise him to a higher degree. If it wasn't for jealousy, we wouldn't advance at all. It's clear that it's the most driving, motivating force. So first of all, we shouldn't destroy it, jealousy, and in general, everything. Any other attribute that we have in us that exists in a natural manner between brothers, then we should use it in the correct manner. So jealousy between brothers, how can we put it? It should be as much as understood as possible between them as a natural thing, and to use it to show them how much it is possible, how it's given to us to be above each and every negative attribute of ours, meaning to transform it to positive. The parents that don't put an emphasis on what each of us is good at or bad at toward the other, in all areas, they're already helping us a lot to overcome our natural jealousy. I need to see in my parents that they're that they relate to each of us the way he is. They love me the way I am, and they love the other. Let's say the twin brother, doesn't matter who, the way he is. Therefore, all the issues of jealousy that break out between us, They're actually, they don't pay attention to it. They give us an example that in their eyes, it's not even important. So it turns out that that same calmness, that same calm attitude that they're always showing us to the brothers, that teaches us that they're not jealous of one another, but rather that each is occupied with what he's busy with. And the fact that I see something in the other that I'm jealous of, it should bring me to a state where the parents are teaching us how we can, through jealousy, actually reach either a stronger connection between us or to connection. Give me an example, let's say, of jealousy. There can even be simple jealousy. Let's say that one child shows a toy and the other child wants to take that same toy from him. It's a simple example. There's all kinds of degrees of jealousy. Let's say they both want to play with the exact same thing. It's impossible in the middle. I can't just... We need to teach them that what one is busy with has nothing to do with the other. That I don't need to dress on the other and take his life and his example, but rather I am myself and he is himself. Where first of all, we each have to have our own place. In such a manner that I have my things, he has he things, his things. I never disturb him and he doesn't disturb me. In other words, the attitude and the atmosphere in the family has to be that each person has his own thing. And if I see and I feel like doing something with something that he has and I don't have, I have to, with this example that I feel in the family, I have to just control myself. Who has to control himself? The child. But it's only through examples. It's only through this calm attitude that there is in the house. And if not, then it has to be brought up for discussion, and the discussion can be direct in a case like this. We're not saying that he has a characteristic that we're... But rather we're talking about a certain kind of behavior. He wants to take from the other, and the other is playing with something. So, of course, he immediately also has a desire to play with this, and not two people can play with it, just one person. So here we have to discuss it, what we can do. If he started with it first, then it's his. And if you want it now, what can we do? If you take it, you're going to take it from him. Therefore, you don't deserve it. And there's nothing we can do. We have to restrain. He has to restrain himself until he leaves it. And then you'll take it, if you even want it afterwards. That's the question. And we need to raise them to this little higher psychological degree. I want it because he has it. And if he didn't have it, then I wouldn't want it. In other words, I don't want the game itself, but because he's playing and enjoying it, I'm jealous of his pleasure. And it appears to me that I should also play with it. So first of all, this is what we're talking about in the workshop. Let's do an exercise where one is playing with something and feeling pleasure from it, the other one comes and wants it. So either the first isn't giving it up because it's his, and the other one will have to give it up and not take it forcibly, and try to prevent himself from taking acts and reach a situation where at the end of the day he's busy, occupied, and not jealous, or just to compromise, to give it up. Let's see who gives it up first and how much the other person will enjoy playing with it. How long will it take? Of course, not a long time. Why? Because what he wanted to play with, he wanted to play with what the first person was playing with. It comes because he's discovering pleasure there, and he wants the pleasure. The minute the first person is no longer giving him this incentive, he's not really interested in it. He'll play with it for a few minutes, and that's it. Let's learn from this that you don't want to play with this toy, let's say, or this game, but rather you want it because you see how much pleasure he's getting from it. You have no interest in the game, but rather you have interest in the fact that you see it in the other. Therefore, if you don't have any interest in the game, you can take another game and to begin to play with it, to get into it and enjoy it, just like he's enjoying the game that he chose. We need to teach them these things in life, because afterwards he'll get much greater examples. I won't be jealous of strong people or rich people. I can live my life and be happy in my part. It's the beginning of looking at life in a very basic way. And therefore, we need to always keep working on this point, that jealousy will only be correct, beautiful jealousy, that what I'm jealous of, it's worth it for me or not worth it for me, and whether it's, I see someone has a Mercedes and he's successful, he's a movie star, etc., and I'm not. So will I eat myself up my whole life? I'll kill him, I'll steal from him, what should I do? In other words, I always need to see that I can restrain myself, that I can choose what suits me. Let's say I'm limited in those things and what he's doing. He's a big athlete or something. And I'm a normal person, so for me, there's different areas that I can succeed in. The main thing for me is to reach my own joy of life, that I'm happy. And not that I'm taking his example and I have to reach the same pleasure. He has his attributes and his conditions, so he's reaching it. And it appears to me that I'll only be happy when I'll be the exact same as him. Why do I have to be precisely like him? There's a process here that we need to teach them to be happy with what they have. That's first and foremost. And here, jealousy has to give us truly a foundation for building ourselves and verify our attitude to life. And gradually from that, we're explaining to them, you want to enjoy. How do you think you can enjoy in such a manner that no one else will disturb you? Because others that want to contradict the others, there's lots of people like that. You want to take something from your brother, let's say. And if you play with it and another boy comes along and takes it from you, and he's stronger, then what will be? And there won't be parents. In other words, you have to find for yourself such things in life that will make you successful, and you'll enjoy it, and you won't scratch anyone's eyes out. In that, you're not inviting any bad jealousy on yourself. start to build something together and start to do something together. And also together in such a manner that if a third or fourth person comes, they'll be able to join. It shouldn't be competitive, either him or me, or just us two and not the third person. Try these kinds of games, to be in these kinds of games, meaning you're teaching them about the connection between people. Gradually, in the future, we'll be able to explain from this that the pleasure people want to enjoy the game or whatever, the surest thing is that you're making other people happy, that you're happy and that no one can take it from you. And actually, everyone's happy and supports it because this is the safest game. So we start from the little things, and throughout the years we develop them gradually until he understands that his whole life is a game and how to build it, this process, this life, in a way that it'll be pleasant for everyone and not on anyone's account. Not that you're taking anything from anyone, but just the opposite. You're contributing to others and transforming it to pleasure. That's the surest kind of filling. I understood a very basic element that this issue of jealousy, like you say, I'm jealous of my brother's pleasure and not the object itself. If we give it to him, he won't leave it. He grabs it and then he's not interested and you see it on the side. And actually, if I understood correctly, this feeling of jealousy, if the parents learn how to work with it properly, along with the child, then he gradually learns what causes him pleasure. But between them, we really need to do manipulations. This is a place for manipulations. I go to the first one and I say, let's do an exercise. He really wants it. So give it to him. So first of all, you're giving him an example how to compromise, how to give it up. Also, let's measure according to the clock how long it'll take him to drop it. If you discover that you don't need it, that you're giving it to him, here, take it. 5 minutes. And he'll leave it. So afterward, we can sit and have a discussion about the case and learn something from it. Of course, that until they understand this and until they rise above their feelings, when they're deep in their feelings, they have no brain, that's clear. But gradually, from what age can they really understand this feeling of jealousy? From the smallest age, they're not capable of rising above. They can differentiate between their heart and mind. But let's say the age of 4, for sure. For sure. And the main thing is, again, when we, not only in that, we need to see this whole spectrum of cases that we're going through with him, that, like we said, I'm always talking with him. If we're together, I'm always telling him what I see, how I relate to life, how I see this and that. He's learning. He's hearing it from me, how I relate to life, how it has to be on this fellow man, what I'm watching. And then it turns out that it's added on, all these things. They all come together, and he starts to start telling himself what he sees. He's watching. I recommend talking to my grandson. Try. Yeah, you'll see. It's interesting. He doesn't like playing with kids. He sits on the side, he looks at them, and if you sit next to him, he'll start saying, he did this, he did that. His attitude to life is different. When a person becomes some kind of, not a researcher, he's learning relations between people. He's aware. He's aware of himself. I wanted to verify a basic principle here. Excuse me. I wanted to verify a basic principle. And this example of a child playing and his brother coming and taking it away from him, you said that on that we can do a discussion about it, a direct discussion about this case, because here we're not talking about an attribute, but it's behavior. It's clear. The case is clear. It's not, even though it has to do with them, it's in the here, it's in front of them. Therefore, we need to verify it. So when do we know when it's okay to speak about something? About things that happen between them, you're allowed to talk about it, that it already happened. Meaning it happened and it's in front of us, then there's the ability to speak about it. And also the fact that we did an exercise that he compromised, we talk about that as well, and we talk about it transparently, and look how it took you only 5 minutes and you no longer want the toy. And it's good that he gave it up. And you saw now that it, you're not interested in it. You just had an urge to take it from him. And next time it will be from the other one, the same thing. They're teaching him who the person is. So in previous discussions, you said we shouldn't talk with a child about his negative behavior. What do you mean? The stuff that happens between them, we are allowed to talk about, and we should talk about it. What's out there and clear between them, that we're obligated to talk about. But all kinds of other personal behaviors, his various inclinations that he has, no. As much as possible, restrain yourself or give an example that we saw in the street today. Okay? Meaning there's a very clear differentiation. That boy isn't so pretty because he's always picking his nose. A stranger, not him. That we can talk about. What's bad about it, what's good about it, but no one will say that it's him out of the other kids. That he himself, we want he himself to criticize himself and think if he did it or not. We want to develop in them self-criticism. There's a feeling when you describe it that there's some matureness, that from a young age they need to get to a stage where they're ready for it, because brothers are inclined to laugh at each other. It says in the Torah that in the old days there was no young child at the age of 6 that didn't know the laws from the center of Israel down to the south, Beersheba. That's how much they taught them the evil inclination. And it all depends on the environment. The environment in those days was different. It was at a higher level. And at the moment, we're in exile from those special attributes that they had in those days, love thy neighbor as thyself, a mutual bestowal. I have another question about jealousy. Yes. When you explain jealousy, you explain that your point is to allow the child to develop the ability to be happy with what he has, to know when to be jealous and then to get a motivation to attain it, and when it's something that has nothing to do with me and there's no point in me investing effort in it and etc. So when you say be happy with your part, with what you have, it sounds like the opposite of having a driving force. If the jealousy that you explained at the beginning, you said what comes from nature, first of all, it exists. There's no denying it. And just know how to use it properly. I am jealous of your success, but you can jump at 2 meters. I'm fat. I can't. But I'm jealous. I'm jealous of your achievements, not precisely in that, but in the fact that you succeeded in attaining something, that you got appreciation from your parents or the environment. No, not necessarily. It's nice to be appreciated, but being happy with his part, that's against the external appreciation. But I'm jealous of you in that you're... that you achieved your potential, you realized yourself. And how can I realize myself, my full potential? God forbid I have a limp. A child that he's not so healthy. So I'm good at chess. I'm good at some other game. Something else I develop. Let's see, the main thing, you can see it mainly on people who are disabled. He develops for himself an occupation, a profession, etc., that he enjoys. He usually sits on a computer or something that he knows, and they're very successful. You know people like that, right? No, it didn't. There's a lot of people like that. That precisely because he's disabled and because he has no choice, he develops some breakthrough to some profession that other people are so diffused they don't succeed. So what's happening with the kids? That a child needs to know that he will be successful in this certain thing. So the positive part of jealousy as a motivating force to advance is to awaken in a person the ability to implement what's special about him. And then what do I learn from it? I learn that it's worth it for me to invest in something that I'm good at to realize myself. That's the jealousy. You as a father, you look at one child and another. One child is running around. He should go to sports, athletics, etc. And the other one is heavier. So bring him to other stuff, to other activities, etc. One is successful there and the other is successful there, whether they succeed or not, but each one's in their place. In other words, it's the same with the attributes we spoke of. What do you want to emphasize? That each one wants to realize himself with what's special about him and not the other. He plays with this toy, I can play with the other one. But I saw that he's really into that game. Then I'll get into the other game. So that's already a result of where they're aspiring to. Yes, through our examples and the workshops that we do, how much he threw it down or how attracted he is, not so much how much he's attracted to the game, but to make the other person happy. I also wanted to verify before we go forward, you said to do manipulations one on the other, saying compromise him, compromise, etc., so they'll learn it. Okay. In another discussion, you said to pay attention to not do things that the child will be afraid that you won't do it. There was a discussion before about relations between brothers, and you said if we're talking about something we saw in the street, that someone's picking their nose, then don't say to the big one, we'll talk about that, but we're actually talking about the little boy, because then he'll say, Daddy's going to do the same thing to me behind his back. You're not afraid? No, we're talking about it out in the open. We're talking about it out in the open, that we did this thing to teach, to learn from that. What will happen if one compromises to the other? I don't even need to persuade the big brother. I'm asking you, please, compromise, do me a favor, give it up. And then when it happens, we learn from that attributes as if they're not ours. They're just dressed on us. to the extent that you bring them some psychological, philosophical viewpoint of life. What do you mean we learn attributes? Let's say you're looking at some child and you're saying, he's like this and like that. You explain to your child how you see people, how they relate to each other, how they move, how they behave, play, etc. You don't criticize them. You do it as observing. As an expert, checking things objectively in an independent manner. What do you mean? Let's say you're walking in the park, you see some kids. Let's say we don't even know them. What do you mean? You explain to him this picture. Kids are playing. Those are climbing well. Those are doing that. This child doesn't really know. He's a bit fat. This child is quick. He's running. Simple, easy things that don't have a lot of depth. But he sees how I'm looking at the picture. I'm not just going into the picture, but I'm looking at it. I see the kids, how they're playing, what their characters are, the relations between them, each one to the rest. For each thing, toward his mother, father that are there next to them, or a dog that's running around, how one pushes the other or lets the other one go up, or they play together. All these things, I convey to him my viewpoint by always talking about how I see the picture. And he hears it. The child hears everything, and I'm always talking. And then, before he himself gets into the game, I convey the picture to him where he's going. He was born now in a new scene. I didn't understand it. It's as if he's in a theater now. He came in. Which scene did he come into? Which scenario? I'm telling him how I see it. And he comes in, and he's included in it, but the way I relate to it remains with him. What's your goal toward him? What do you want to achieve with this criticism and verification that he'll have? About what about everything in life, each and everything in life? This child does this, and this child does that, and behaves like this. And until he's even telling me, this child said an incorrect sentence. I hear it like this from him. That you have to say this and this. That's correct, Daddy. I remember I was walking around with my son when he was little, and someone was saying something and said, my engine, I need to replace the car. My engine's eating too much gas. So my son said, no, you should say, fool. The engine's drinking gas, fuel, and he always. What will it give him in life to have this objective view? He can be the state controller. Yes, he can be the controller of the country. That he lives with this logical perception of the world, that he understands where he is. It's not criticism. Criticism means that he's an expert about his life, that from that he can decide what to do next in life. What's the difference between these two forms? You said not criticism. 20 years we begin to prepare kids for life. If you want to prepare him for life, you have 20 years. You always have to escort him. What's the difference? You emphasize now that it's not criticism, but that he's verifying what's good for him to do in life. It's like we talked about the attributes, that that's what's been given to us from nature. It's been given to us from humanity, how we need to accept it. I accept it. I don't criticize them. I don't come to correct them. I'm just coming to see how I integrate in this environment to attain the goal, to attain my goal properly. It's a whole realm of facts that I arrange afterward together, and with this perspective, I live in it. It becomes my I, the person in me, the person in me. What's the issue that I'm not going to criticize you? Why are you afraid of this? You keep saying it's not criticism, because then he won't correct himself. I want to show him that anyone who criticizes is actually criticizing himself. It's a very advanced, much more advanced stage, that what you see everyone in your eyes. Are they right or not? Are they good or bad, etc., etc.? In the meantime, we absorb the picture. We're filming what's in front of us, and also in this filming, we're dependent on our attributes. But afterward, I want to gradually transfer him to the next stage, to the advanced stage. Why do you say that this is bad and this is otherwise? Maybe you should check yourself. Maybe you need to bring yourself down to zero and not see yourself as positive or negative, because these are simply your attributes. It's like a machine that I have to calibrate it first and then look at others. Where's my machine? Is it even correct or not correct? Maybe if it's so warped that I'm looking at everyone, everyone's thieves, everyone's rude, etc. Maybe not. Maybe I'll see it in another manner, that what's in front of me is an ideal picture, and I need to correct myself in it. And what I see is actually the Creator is bringing me to correct myself. The opposite. But I need to prepare it for a long time before I begin working with it on its internalness. And then he begins to see instead of positive or negative, or instead of negative, positive, the opposite picture, that everything is passing through him. And then how can I see the perfect world? How can I reach a state where the world is perfect? How? Only on condition that I identify the upper force in him. And if I see him like this, then it's a sign that I'm identifying with who? The Creator in front of me? Hang on. But we want to bring a person to correction. The correction at the end of the day will come whether we want it or not. Either we're going in the correct manner, then we're not fighting anything in the world. Just the example, like I talked about the kids, I can bring them to correction. This is how I bring them to a state where just the correction itself and the good example toward others, he can relate correctly to life. I want to relate to another point that's usually a result of this feeling of jealousy, which is competitiveness. There's a lot of competitiveness between kids. And the question is, how do I as a parent relate to competition? Should I aspire that there shouldn't be any competition? Maybe there should be good competition. And if there is, what does it mean, good competition between brothers? I'll tell you the end, and from there, you'll know, you'll see how to build it. Good competition, it depends on how much they help one another. How much one brother helps the other, that's competition. Okay, how do you reach that? That's the goal. Now think about it. Okay, Okay, now let's go from here backward. It means that we encourage it. We encourage competition. Not just any competition, only positive competition. Only positive competition. Again, we're talking about the characteristic itself, that competition isn't bad, but rather how we turn it around so it will be beneficial. So I'm not building myself on another person's destruction. It doesn't come all at once and in a few minutes. You build it gradually. Maybe let's take it gradually. It's very important. It's a central aspect between brothers. So after we mark the goal, we need to create positive competition between them. How will we create a process to bring them to this point? So let's think about a zero point. Give me a picture. There has to be an atmosphere in the family. Such an atmosphere that only mutual help is respected. Is accepted well, and everyone's thankful for that. Only mutual help. I sit next to him on the couch, watching some cartoon next to him or playing something with him, and I say, excuse me, I have to ask, maybe mommy needs something from me, maybe mommy needs help, which is clear, it's only as an example for him. I'm doing it, I'm disconnecting from him, I'm going to the kitchen, let's say, after a minute or two I come back, he received an example. Okay? What does that have to do with competition? Competition, that we're in a competition, how to help one another. Positive competition, that's what we're aspiring to. That's what I understood. That's what we want to bring them to. So let's say, how many brothers are there? Two or three? What's better? Let's say there's three. And we know that that's the goal. We're doing well. There's a simple competition between them. How do we bring them from point A to point B? We have to show them the opposite world. What's the process? We're gradually... Let's make such games that will reward the person who gives it up. It's not simple. It sounds that compromise between brothers, giving it up, it's a game. It's a competitive game that the person who gives up more profits more. If it's checkers or whatever, whoever gives up more benefits more. But not that we're just playing. We're learning that from giving up, there can be competition in that. And then we discuss it in our circle. Why is it better than regular competition? In regular competition, I have to always protect myself. I'm not sure that I'm not going to get some slap from my brother. That we need to hide ourselves from our parents. That what I gained today, tomorrow I could lose. In positive competition, we have to go over it. Of course, there's some psychological jump here. Some inner transformation inside, but we can enjoy this, get a lot more joy from this in a safe manner, and just wait for good from one another. Do I have to believe you, Daddy, when you say that? No, I'm telling you. Try along with them to create all kinds of situations. or games. The game should never be who's going to get there first or who's going to do something. How do I create the game in such a way that the message... I'm making you, putting blindfolds on both of you, and I'm saying now... Both of you are benefiting, not just one, both of you are benefiting that you are now going through the living room and not bumping into anything. You're just helping each other get through, let's say. We had that game once that we went that way. I remember when we did it. What's the secret of the game? You have to look after whoever's in front of you and especially whoever behind you. If you do it correctly, you pull him after you to make sure that he'll do the right, make a right step. And that's how you get through it. Meaning everyone has to look after the person behind him and is completely trust the person in front of him. And in that way, you reach in a safe, convenient, pleasant manner to the goal. So blindfold them and let them start and let them reach a situation where only through mutual support they'll benefit, they'll reach something. All kinds of acts like that through games. But there shouldn't be competition between them. That the two only succeed by supporting one another. It's not just that there's not support that's... We need to think which games we're offering to kids and also to big people. I'm not talking about competition between kids. Let's say we're going to the park. Me and my children, he jumps. One is, oh, they're doing distance jumps, and one jumps, let's say we're two brothers, I jump more than you. There's a competitive issue here, right? I jumped further than you. You're my brother, she's the mother, we're in the park. I jump farther than you, I play football better than you. One aspect. I'll give you another area. We're learning. I get a better grade than you. Doesn't matter. I'm just getting, we're making a picture. I make nicer pictures than you. I don't know. In each and everything, my point for comparison is always this measurement. Who's more and who's less? This is the foundation of competition, to be more. So you need a point of when I'm one person, and whatever I attain, and if I don't have brothers, then I have to compare myself to people outside. But if we're two brothers, if we're close in age, or not talking about twins, how does a mother deal with this never-ending competition between them? We go into the elevator, we run to see who's going to hit the button in each and everything. We feed off it, we live for it. We're always competing somehow. So you and I are brothers. She's the mother. How does she need to relate to it? What does she need to do with that? Is it natural? Is there a way to work with this ambitiousness of competition? Yes, no, or maybe we shouldn't touch it. That's the question about competition. It's a motor that moves all the interactions between brothers. So what's the right way for a mother to relate to this? Jealousy, I think we understood. It's one force, competition. We think that in this manner a person develops. That's our problem, that he's in competition with others. And in that, he's like a monkey, actually, that what another person has, he has to have. And even better, he doesn't develop himself. He he wants to have the attribute in the other in himself, but who I am myself, I'm not revealing. I'm learning from others, and I want to be this and this and this even more than them. These things bring all of humanity to a regression, a degradation. No one is living their lives. Nobody knows themselves. He gets an example how to be. I look at Hollywood, I look at all these movies, I look at all these this whole image there of all these heroes. What do I get out of it? We have inside some kind of feeling as a fact that if a child is not in competition with others, then who is he? How will he learn anything? What will he learn from everyone? We don't need to learn it from everyone in this manner. Kids have to be opposite altogether, and don't be afraid that he'll be different than everyone. Friends don't need to be competitive in that manner, but rather in good and not in bad. I don't need to take an example from others and do exactly like they're doing. Not at all. I need to have completely different standards, completely different values, and direct the child toward there. So what kind of values and standards can replace this competition that's the most natural in the world? I understand what you're saying. Precisely competition. Why is a child trying to acquire his uniqueness by imitating someone else? It's the exact opposite. It's like a monkey. He becomes like a monkey and not a person. But why does he do it, actually? Because he also wants to feel special. Why do I need to be like him? That's precisely it. What can replace this competition that's instinctive? This is natural, whether we like it or not. Either we're going along with nature, or we're going to correct nature, one or the other. We can't succeed at both. Either I'm encouraging him to take an example from all these heroes, so-called, or I'm teaching him to have other values. But here he has a brother. I need to do it to both of them, but the competition between them, if we'll allow them, if we disconnect them from any external influence, you isolate them from any external influence. You gave birth to two, you have two, you automatically put them into a situation of competition. No, if you educate them, it won't happen. I'll give you an example. You're with someone that you love. We're going for a walk, or we're running, or a jog, or something. You're stronger than him, or you're more successful than him. If you love someone, you want to be next to them. You want to be as him. You want to complete him, that he'll complete you. The main thing for you is the connection and not the competition, that your difference. You don't want to show him the difference between you, but how much you're together. I think we understood something. Maybe this is the problem. In competition, a person is measuring himself. He's measuring himself compared to someone else, not himself, in relation to someone else, but it's always in relation to something. How do I measure myself in relation to collaboration? You want to reach the maximum collaboration, but it's as if I'm missing this measurement point, because a person's natural inclination is to measure himself, to be as one man with one heart. Saying grades, it's clear. I got a grade and they measured me, for example. That's also not good. That's not good. Why do we need grades? Why do we need grades? He was born smarter, and I wasn't so born like that. So who are you giving grades to? To the upper force that created us this way? Forget about grades. I'll give you an example. We're running to see who opens the elevator first. We go into the lobby of the building. Who gets to the elevator first? It's automatically. We get out of the elevator. Who's the first one out of the elevator? Who gets in the chair first? It's in each and everything. You're talking to me. It's like high stuff. Maybe because I have four kids, then I have a lot of pictures in my head. Competition is not some artificial plastic thing. It's a natural urge that motivates them in every moment in life. Great. Finally, you're in my frequency. So now I'm asking, what do we do? Either we allow it to develop naturally, meaning we did nothing as parents. Education. The example that you give a person before natural urges, artificial acts, the artificial verifications, verifying that make it, they do it until it becomes their second habit. That instead of competition, they'll have a competition for connecting. Each will give the other place. Each one will look after the other, first of all, in a gentlemanly way. Yes, that is correct. That's what education is called. That instead of his natural urges, he's now bringing him another system of behavior to the extent that he can because it becomes his second nature. The habit becomes second nature. You're teaching them until it happens. Can I give prizes to understand the message? Is this something I can give him a prize for? Because it's working on some kind of system. Yes, yes. Because otherwise, my motivation as a parent, I understand. And as a child, it's to please my parents. And then through this prize, we're not saying he's just like an engine without fuel. We all need prizes and punishments and everything. So the parent actually always has to see if the brothers or if done something between them that contributes to the connection between them, then they deserve pizza. The prize has to be for everyone in general. Let's say one gave more and the other gave less, of course. Each of them, they try to encourage him to make an effort, of course. How do we eat the pizza?
No.
I know how. Doesn't matter how many pizzas you buy. You buy 10 pizzas. I need this many slices. I need this many. Our time is up. I'd still like to conclude. We learned lots of things about the relations between brothers. I'd like you to try to summarize the basic direction we want to learn as parents, how to arrange relations between our kids who are brothers. What's the main insight in your head? To program the boy through explanations, examples, talks, workshops, so that he'll have the correct viewpoint on life and on himself, that he'll be a psychologist for himself, that he'll know to see himself from the side, to look at himself from the same angle in life, and from he'll look at the world in two forms, two viewpoints. His natural viewpoint and through the education system of values, and also on himself. He's looking at his attributes and criticism from the side. If he knows how to do this, if he knows to differentiate himself from his natural inclinations than what he differentiated himself. That's called the man in him. Because in his natural manner, he's called an animal. That's what we need to reach, to create the image of man in him. And this man is called that he's actually the opposite of what he has from birth. Our time is up. Thank you, Rav Lightman. Thank you, Nitza. Thank you. We're learning to be humans. In the meantime, all the best. New life.